This is Adrian Paul, Duncan McLeod from Highlander, and you're listening to Blood of Kings on the Fandom Podcast Network.
Welcome, Highlander fans, to episode 71 of Blood of Kings, a Highlander podcast here on the Fandom Podcast Network. On this show, we cover all things Highlander, including guest interviews, movies, TV shows, books, audiobooks, anime, games, special events, and another Highlander the Raven episode review, and more. I'm Kevin, your sultry host, co-host here at Blood of Kings. However, you know I don't do this all alone. I need my fellow immortal brother and fellow Highlander aficionado, also with a sultry voice. With me is my co-host Norman. Welcome, Norm.
You're the sultry of swing. Bum, bum, bum. Bum, 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 bum.
What song is that?
The Sultan of Swing. Remember Dire Straits? Oh, yeah, but you're the sultry of swing.
The sultry of swing. I like that.
Yeah. I just felt like singing tonight because I'm in a good mood. And I like singing.
Good, good, good. Well, so, you know, last episode, we started our two-part look on Highlander the Raven. And that was episode 70, Highlander the Raven, a review of part one, A Matter of Time.
You know, when we reviewed that, I don't think either of us asked exactly what that meant. Exactly what was the matter of time?
That's a good question. What was the matter of time?
It was just a matter of time that Amanda and Nick were going to moonlighting.
Like kissing?
Yeah. That's just a matter of time.
A matter of time that Joe Dawson would return?
A matter of time that Amanda's past would catch up with her?
A matter of time they would jump the continent over to Paris?
All these are good.
The matter of time Valentine Pelka would return?
Yeah. All good. I think we just answered it.
Yeah, right. We covered that.
Yeah, we're good.
Well, this episode, Blood of Kings 71, we're going to be talking about Highlander the Raven, episode review part two, The French Connection. This is part two of our Highlander Raven episode review. This is the next episode, the conclusion to this two-part story arc that's called The French Connection. The previous episode, of course, was called A Matter of Time. However, before we continue, Norm, I thought you'd tell our wonderful listeners and fans out there how they can reach us here at Blood of Kings.
All right. Pay attention, people, because I'm going to tell you this once per episode of Blood of Kings. So you can always find Blood of Kings on the Fandom Podcast Network Master Feed. You can also find us on FPNet, which is on the Podbean app. You can find the Fandom Podcast Network on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play for Android users. You can find us on Instagram at Blood of Kings Pod. You can find us on our amazing Facebook page, Blood of Kings, a Highlander fandom group. And you can find us on Blood of Kings, a Highlander CCG collectible card game page. And some great stuff lined up for the future of the CCG.
I'm really excited about that. I love the activity that's going over there.
Yeah, so we're going to tap into Mike Sellers, Cat Cedar, and maybe a few other special guest stars to talk about. I don't know. I'm kind of like, I'm pro and con about that, because I'm pro that you can play it anywhere, and I'm con that it kind of takes away being able to go to brick and mortars and just play it with buddies, you know? It's kind of like that's the way games go nowadays.
Playing with real card stock and, yeah, I hear you.
Yeah, cracking open booster packs, all that kind of stuff.
We're talking about the online version that people are playing of the Highlander CCG.
Exactly. So we will feature that in future episodes coming up shortly. If you'd like to contact us, you can contact us through email. You can bloodofkingspodcast@gmail.com. You can also tweet us on Twitter at bloodofkingspod. And Kevin, where can we find you on the social medias?
You can find me on Instagram and Twitter at @Spartan_Phoenix.
You said Twitter. It's very British of you.
Twitter.
On the Twitter. You can also find me on the Twitter at Starfighter1701 and on Instagram at SoCalSwordFighter. And then you can find Mike on Twitter. Mike is our intrepid editor who listens to all of our nonsense and actually probably more than once. And it's all stuck in his headspace. Poor Mike. On Twitter at Immortal Chamoli.
All right. We love reviews. Please head on over to iTunes, search the Fandom Podcast Network. And of course, if you're listening to Blood of Kings and you like Blood of Kings, mention that in your review and we'll give you a shout out on a future show. We'd love to get some more reviews. And also, you can help support the Fandom Podcast Network and Blood of Kings by going to TeePublic and purchasing a shirt with Blood of Kings or any of our other great shows on the network. Just search Fandom Podcast Network when you get to TeePublic. It helps support us, and you get to walk away with some really cool looking swag. So,
aren't you excited like the day that you like walk down, I don't know, like say Dragon Con in Atlanta this summer, or just up and down a street and you see just randomly like one of our logos?
Oh yeah.
I'd freak out. It'll happen. It'll happen if you guys support us on TeePublic. It'll happen.
Definitely, definitely. Well, we wanted to let people know too that you know, when you do go to TeePublic, you support us. You know, we get a little kickback and help support with our costs for doing podcasting and stuff like that. We're not making money here. Just helps, you know, helps us keep going. And we really love doing this show. We love doing the other shows on the Fandom Podcast Network. And I got to tell you, like you said, Norm, when you see people with our shirts and stuff, it is a really, really good feeling.
It's a rush for sure.
It is. It is. Well, I thought this would be a good time to head on over to Joe's. I'm a little hungry. Norm, maybe you are a little thirsty.
Both.
Oh, yeah, totally. Let's head on over to Joe's. All right, here we are, Joe's, relaxing here at the watcher table. There's no one here right now, so we can go ahead and take their table for once. Before we get into the Sword Experience updates, I want to talk about some posts on Facebook, specifically on the Blood of Kings fandom group, which I'm really proud of. I love how that community has developed, and it's becoming a family. And I wanted to ask you about a post that you did.
What I do.
You says, quote, "That moment when you are doing some deep house cleaning and you find what you thought was lost for good. And you have these two Highlander pins and this card, exclusive member of the Highlander clan card here, membership.
Yeah.
Can you please give us, like myself, that did not know about this and did not have the opportunity to acquire this, tell us the backstory of this.
The backstory of the clan?
Yeah, and these pins and yeah, the whole clan itself, everything.
Well, one of the pins was from the 10th anniversary. I guess it was a special collector's pin. No, I'm sorry. Was it the celebration pin? I don't even remember. I think it's my celebration pin. It's a one-of-a-kind kind of pin. It's like really hard to find.
One is dated 1998.
Yeah, that's the celebration pin.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The other one says Highlander McCloud on it.
That's the clan pin. Yeah. So obviously in 1998 in Anaheim, California was the series wrap party for Highlander. And it was supposed to have been the end all be all wrap party. Everybody was there. Adrian was there. Stan was there. Peter was there. I mean, everybody was there, including Alexandra Vandernoot. She was there. And, you know, as you know, we all loved her as Tessa, and seeing Adrian and Alexandra Vandernoot together was heart melting. Anyway, that's besides the point. I guess that came in your bag of goodies, that pin. And the other pin is the Highlander clan pin. And the clan was a fan club that started right around the time that the series was ending, and there were supposed to have been like specific perks and certain club inside kind of gifts and things that you can get and discounts to the catalog, and all that stuff was represented by your clan membership. So at one point in time, you know, all of this stuff was on display, and we all have our tabernacles or our altars to our geekdom, right? So all that stuff was on display at one point in time. I think I had them underneath my katanas. And then you move, or you pack up and you kind of clean out the house and you organize things. Well, for years, I haven't seen these pins and my club card.
Right.
For years. And you can go on eBay and maybe find one or something like that. But what was special to me about my clan club card, I signed it. You know, it was my card, right? So I was doing some house cleaning the other day, and I found one of my Watcher's tins from the card game. Now, if you haven't seen this before, when the collectible card game was really going strong, they released a very special print of the series edition cards, and they came in this really cool tin that looked like a Watcher's Chronicle.
Yeah.
And I used that to stuff like all of my cool collectibles in. Well, I found that in a bookshelf in the garage.
I have mine right over here. It's actually underneath my lamp.
Right. What do you have in yours? Anything special?
Nothing right now, but it was one that you gave me. Do you remember that?
Yeah. But you got to put your special stuff in there.
I know.
So in there was a Renfair belt pouch that I haven't seen again in years. And then inside that, my two pins, my clan membership card, and Kevin, this is particularly special for you, a pair of Lord of the Rings six-sided dice from the Decipher RPG.
Oh, wow. That is so cool.
From the very first Lord of the Rings adventures, which I did the illustrations for.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's really cool, man.
And the numbers are carved in Tengwar.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So I found that.
I still have those somewhere.
I thought I hit the lottery that day. I almost cried. I'm like, I can't believe I haven't seen these in years. And there you go. So folks, if you think some of your stuff has disappeared in your Highlander collection, you might want to think about going into your garage or in your attic and just kind of dusting off a couple boxes. And you never know what you might find.
There's two more things I want to bring up with you, post by you, by the way.
God, what did I do? Jeez.
You have been posting some pictures into the official Highlander 25th anniversary gathering convention photo album on Blood of Kings, mm-hmm. or at least commenting on some of them.
Yeah.
And they've been fun to see. You posted a great one of me and Elizabeth, mm-hmm. a great one of you and Bron, mm-hmm. The funny picture of the guy's whip that got caught up in the sprinkler.
That could have ended a completely different way that day.
Yes. Because I remember I was in that picture, and I remember that. I took a few of those shots. You feeling a little nostalgic? What's going on there?
Well, actually, I posted those right around the time where the convention either was happening or after that. But people in Facebook, the algorithm is that if people start remarking on those pictures, they'll just come back up in the post.
Okay.
So some newer fans have been discovering some of these images, and they've been kind of either liking them or remarking on them. But when I see those, I'm like, oh, yeah. Yeah. Those were good times. Yeah, I love the picture of you and Elizabeth.
Yeah.
You know, because
she's such sweet. I've got a lot of pictures I need to add to that album that I haven't done.
Yeah, man, hit it.
You know, so yeah.
And anyone, that's an open album on Facebook for Blood of Kings. So anyone, if you have pictures from the Highlander 25th anniversary convention, just add them and share that experience with everybody, because the more pictures, the more memories. And we're coming incredibly close to the official release of the DVD from that weekend.
Yeah,
I can't. Right. We're gonna have to do a show on that for sure.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah,
we're excited about that.
I can't wait. It's gonna be so.
Well, it's been fun. It's been fun seeing those pictures pop up and people discovering them for the first time. And I gotta get my butt in gear and go fish out a bunch of those pictures and post them on there, because I got a lot of good ones. You know.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Now the last thing I want to ask you about is you posted. You posted this thing about this movie that Viggo Mortensen is in, because it says, I can totally see Adrian in this period piece. Has anyone seen this movie, A la Triste?
Mm-hmm.
In scouring the interwebs for more Destreza references, I came across this movie. I have not seen it, but the costumes and weapons look incredible, and some of the movie descriptions boast historical, accurate sword fighting.
Mm-hmm.
Methinks I will give this a try.
Methinks.
How did you find this movie? Because I had never heard of it.
And it's funny too, because I've been kind of like playfully lambasted about like, why don't I know about this movie?
Okay. just to clarify too, because this was news to me. Mm-hmm. If you look on IMDb, the full name is called Captain A la Triste,
mm-hmm.
the Spanish Musketeer. It came out in 2006.
Yes.
And it looks like it was a Spanish production, I guess. It was not an American production, because when I was searching online for DVDs and Blu-rays, I could not find an American release for it.
Mm-hmm.
I ended up ordering it from overseas. It's an all-region one.
Mm-hmm.
I have an all-region DVD player, Blu-ray player anyway, so I can play almost anything. But I had to see this thing because the pictures that you captured of Viggo Mortensen with that great Spanish hat and the way that he looked.
Right.
Did you order a copy of this?
I did.
Okay.
There are various ways that you can get it, but going all the way back to why did I post it and how did I discovered it? So recently in my historical European martial arts, I have wanted to focus on la verdadera destreza. And that is the influence and the inspiration for Duende. So coming kind of, pardon the pun, coming back full circle on Duende, you know, because it's the mysterious circle, the Spanish mysterious circle. In my HEMA studies, I want to focus on rapier because it's just something that's very personally special to me. Because of that episode, Duende, Anthony and F. Brom McAsh choreographed that great fight between Consone and Duncan MacLeod. So long story short, I wanted to find more influences on destreza. And when I started Google-fooing that, this movie came up.
Did you just say Google-foo?
Google-foo.
Okay. I love that.
I had to go deep into my Google-foo, and this Captain Alatriste, it came up. I guess Alatriste translates to the sad, and it's not a very happy movie. It's also a book series, from what I understand. Vigo's movie was done solely in Spanish, and Vigo like performs all of his lines, and he speaks Spanish throughout the entire movie.
Wow.
Yeah. So I've always wanted to find kind of like my own personal connection with historical European martial arts. A lot of the fighters in there, they'll go to their Viking roots, or they'll go to their English roots or German roots or French roots, right? So I don't, as a Filipino American, I don't have those European roots, but right. I do. Because the Philippines at one point in time were conquered by the Spanish.
Ah.
Okay, so there's Spanish influence in a lot of Philippine culture. Therefore, I can trace at least in some way, in some extended way, my heritage to Spanish roots, and the fencing of that would come from destreza, a Spanish sword fighting style.
Very cool.
So that's why
I got to tell you, the screenshots of Vigo look great, and he's got that awesome mustache.
Oh, he looks incredible. But here's the cool thing. This would be around the same time when Ramirez left Spain to find Connor MacLeod around the early 1500s.
Nice. Okay. Yeah. Gotcha. Well, I've ordered mine. I'm going to watch it when I get back from Australia, so I'm excited about that.
Yeah.
Because I'm curious about the sword fighting. But nice find, though. Nice Google foo.
Thank you very much. But the funny thing is like people, like friends of mine in the HEMA community, is like, how is it that you've not seen this movie? I'm like,
I know. You're almost like getting like nerd shame.
I know, right? You know? It's like, but why go there? Why not say like, I'm so glad that you did find this movie?
I know, right?
So turn that negativity into positivity, folks. And
your Blood of Kings host did not know about this film, but now we do.
Right? So anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, and let me put this out there with the listeners. If there's a kind of an obscure sword fighting movie that you think that you would recommend, bring it to Blood of Kings. You know, because I'd be curious to see what else is out there that I don't know about.
I know like Adrian focuses on the katana primarily in the sword experience, but if he could find a way to get like you know, fencing foils,
right,
and try and find one of those fights that he wants to choreograph. I mean, I would like highly encourage, you know, his students and his followers for the sword experience to try and have him break out and to do something like that, to do some of these really cool fights, right? That'd be kind of neat.
That would be cool.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of swords, of course, we'd like to give you an update on Adrian's sword experience, which you can find more information at www.theswordexperience.com. This will be out already, but we still will mention it anyway. March 9th in Lexington, March 24th in Greenville, South Carolina, May 12th in Albuquerque, and new dates in Europe have been announced. Rome, Italy in June 30th. I just went over Minneapolis. Didn't want to leave you guys out. June 9th in Minneapolis. Mm-hmm. Then June 30th in Rome, Italy. There are two dates in France, July 15th and July 18th. I'm not going to try and pronounce those because I killed that last time. in England on August 11th at the Rochester Castle in Kent, Southeast England. And some more dates will be announced in England and Ireland in June. And, of course, in July, Montreal. So make sure you check out SwordExperience.com and also the Sword Experience podcast that should be out by now.
Yeah.
Make sure you check that out and subscribe and give all the support to Adrian in that podcast that you can. All right. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I think we are done with Joe's. Let's get on out of Joe's and talk some Raven. Okay, here we are, Blood of Kings, the Raven episode review part two, The French Connection. Now, Norm, last time I did it in my little sexy, sultry voice, I thought you would read the Raven show intro, because it's always fun to do.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
You go ahead.
Oh, my gosh, I almost did this in William Shatner's cadence. I don't know why.
I dare you.
Oh, you dare me, huh?
Okay. Yeah, I dare you to do the Raven intro, Shatner. Do it.
Done. She is immortal, 1,000 years old, and she cannot die. A creature of legend, like the raven, a thief who stole the sun and the moon. They sent a warrior to bring her back. He found her, and together they brought back light to the world. I was a cop. To me, she was just a thief. Another day on the job. But she wasn't. She changed my life. Changed everything. And both of us knew from that time on, nothing would ever be the same. Don't challenge me, bro, on Shatner.
Challenge accepted. Well played, sir. Apologies to Paul Johansson.
Thank you. I know, I'm so sorry. But props to William Shatner, bro.
Oh, man, that was awesome. Well done.
I hope that comes across well.
Well done. Of course, the last episode, we talked about A Matter of Time, which we got to see Joe return to the Highlander universe right here on the Raven. And this is also where the production moved from Toronto to France. Mm-hmm. Quick question, and this is something if I get a chance to ask Elizabeth or anyone else, do you know why they moved the production from Vancouver, which was Seacouver, to Toronto?
Well, if the model still was the same, and I'm not 100% sure on this, I'm sure if Andy Sloan is listening to this, he'd be like, no, Norm, you're completely wrong, because I probably am, but I'm going to give it a stab. Logically, it's because we're dealing with another production company. Mm-hmm. And I do believe that we're still dealing with Gaumont Television that had the distribution rights mm-hmm. in Europe. So I would have to do a little bit more homework on that. But on Highlander, the series, it was, you know, you had the American distribution rights, I believe, with Reicher and Davis Panzer Productions. And then you had the European distribution rights in France with Gaumont Television. So
I wonder if it was cheaper to move to Toronto. Maybe that was part of the reason too. So
it's possible. It's possible.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, before I have you read the plot description from the awesome book mm-hmm. known as Fearful Symmetry from the awesome John Mosby, mm-hmm. just want to let people know this is episode 12, The French Connection. Episode aired February
13.
I'm sorry. Episode 13, yeah. Correct. Thank you. The French Connection. Episode aired February 8th, 1999. Director Dennis Barry and writer James Thorpe. These are names that we know very well.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
So, Norm, if you could read The French Connection from Fearful Symmetry.
This will not be in William Shatner's cadence.
Okay, no. Good.
That's it took too much out of me. I'm like, I'm already at like 25% energy after that.
That's all right.
The French Connection, written by James Thorpe and directed by Dennis Barry. Bert is in Paris and takes the severely wounded Nick to safety, but he's aware of Corda and tells Nick to leave. Nick, of course, refuses to listen. Amanda, very much alive and aware that Nick has been injured, seeks out Father Liam Riley, who, like Darius, has left the game behind, to help him track down to get help tracking him down in the city. Finally establishing they're both alive, Amanda and Nick begin to track Corda, but he remains elusive, even when Bert brings down most of the Interpol on his Parisian nightclub in search of the counterfeit operation. Deep in the catacombs, Corda is busy biding his time. Liam doesn't want to be involved directly in any acts of violence, but Nick suggests leaving it in the hands of fate and the high hopes that God might be a basketball fan. Corda decides enough is enough and kidnaps Bert to force Amanda's hand. As time ticks away, Amanda decides she will have to face Corda, her old teacher, once and for all. Also featuring Hans Janicki as Bert Myers, so. Robert Kavanaugh as Father Liam Riley, Tomer Sisley as Felix, Charlie Fouquet as Aurore, Nicholas Pariente as Gerard. Daphne Chung as Dr. Mika. I like Dr. Mika. She was fun.
Yeah, she was cool.
And Sylvain Clement as Clement. Carlos Lopez as Suleiman. Those are all kind of like the support background.
Dr. Mika had a thing for Nick.
Oh,
that was funny,
yeah.
Wasn't it?
Yeah, she did.
That was kind of a funny little comedic moment in this episode. Yeah. And I really liked that. I thought that was funny.
But the name, the character and the actor, not to be overlooked, is Robert Kavanaugh as Father Liam Riley.
Yes, we will be covering him shortly.
Yeah.
Because some parallels I want to mention. But the first point I wanted to bring up was, just like previous Highlander series, the production moves to Paris with this episode, The French Connection. I got to tell you, it was comforting to see Paris backdrop again.
Oh, yeah.
It was a little weird to see Nick walking around, but I got used to it.
There was a scene where he walks through the tunnel, that very famous tunnel shot where we would usually see Duncan's barge in the background.
Yes, with Notre Dame
in the background. Yeah. That's one of those kind of, that's a heartstring moment. Right?
Yeah.
Where you're like, that's where Duncan's barge should be. What's Nick doing there?
This, watching this production in this episode move to Paris was just like eating some nice comfort food.
Oh, yeah, totally.
You know? Yeah. And Amanda, Elizabeth, just is always home at Paris. She loves it there. You know, I think as an actress, it was fun to probably, you know, work there as well. But I love that city. And that's one of the things about watching Highlander that we love when they jump over to Paris and do the Paris episodes.
Yep, for sure.
Yeah. The next point, reoccurring characters in the second half of the Paris season. I want to talk about Father Liam Riley, played by Robert Kavanaugh, a younger version of the Darius character, a fellow immortal who took a vow and renounced violence. So this is interesting. I don't know if we remember how old he is. I'm sure that's somewhere in a Watcher's Chronicles. I don't know how old Father Liam Riley is, but this is interesting. What's your take on that?
I think this is also playing into what John Mosby was saying about how this has become, or these two episodes have become, kind of like the watershed moment of the Raven. Because, again, in Band of Brothers, which was the watershed moment of Highlander, and what you and I believe was the episode that saved Highlander the series, now you're introducing this, even though he's younger than Werner Stalker, you can tell. I mean, you know, he's the actor who plays Father Liam Riley, he's younger. But he's this wise, well-connected immortal who's renounced violence, who's on holy ground. It feels similar. Yeah. Albeit slightly
He's kind of hip, you know. He's playing basketball with the kids.
Yeah, sure.
You know.
Yeah,
yeah.
One of the things that I liked about this character, and again, if we were able to get into subsequent seasons, because he's Irish, or at least his alias at this time is Irish, I would have loved to have. Maybe he was part of Annie Devlin's Freedom Fighters. Maybe that's where he committed some severely atrocious acts of violence against humanity, which forced him onto holy ground.
Right.
I thought that would have been a neat way to just kind of like bridge the gap again.
Now, I may be wrong here, but there was a scene in this episode where Amanda's going up there, you know, for the confession, and it looked like the entrance to Darius's church.
You might be right. I'd have to watch it. Like, I didn't really pay attention to that when I was watching it, but you're probably right. You know, it could have been stock footage.
I don't know if they use the same church or if Father Liam Riley is at the same church or not. I'm not sure. I didn't look into that, but because I just recently rewatched it before we recorded this episode, and I looked at that going, is that the same church? So I'm kind of curious about that. I'm going to throw that out there to Andy Sloan, see if he knows that. But yeah, I like the idea of returning to a type of character that is on holy ground and has a connection to your lead star here. And also the fact that you just touched on, he knows what's going on. He's got his hands and feelers out there. He's, you know, kind of like one of the information guys.
Well,
you know?
One of the small details was if you are going to find an underground doctor to patch up, you know, somebody, who would you go to? Because he has his fingers in everything. He knows what's going on. Yeah.
He knew who could patch up Nick. Right. So that was good. Mm-hmm. Burt Myers also returns, a friend of Nick Wolfe, who's a former Fed now running his own security firm, follows them to Paris where he saves Nick's life and goes into partnership with Amanda to run the club formerly owned by Korda. I did like this development because this gave them a home base to work out of in Paris to do whatever shenanigans they wanted to do. And I liked the little haggling scene between Burt and Amanda at the end of who gets what profits, you know? Mm-hmm. And I thought Nick thought it was kind of weird that they were taking over a Korda's old club, you know? But you know, this is just something that writes well into the story. You need to have a home base. You know, you had the barge, right, of course, right, you know, in the original Highlander series. So I kind of like this. You had a club that a lot of people can mix and meet up in. And it just seems like the right thing to do for this particular series while you're in Paris.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I liked this idea of establishing this home base, especially on holy ground. Yeah. So we're going more into that kind of Grayson style negotiation kind of setting, right? Yeah. Where you could, like, in future seasons, if we got to future seasons, an immortal would come in and they would square off and, you know, violence can't be done, obviously, but like Korda said in A Matter of Times, like, you can't do violence on holy ground. This isn't violence. This is foreplay.
Yeah.
So it could have led for some really interesting writing. And, you know, this is, again, you're dealing with Father Liam Riley, who's working from behind the scenes on holy ground. And now you have Amanda, and she's now on holy ground. So it allows you, at least kind of like in John Wick, you know, you have the Continental. You can't do violence against each other, other assassins of this guild on the Continental grounds. It allows people to kind of like get right up to that moment of violence, but they can't. It's very dramatic.
Next thing I want to talk about is Nick brings Amanda's blue hilted sword to Paris. Mm-hmm. And she thought that was kind of nice and endearing. And the reason why I wanted to bring this up, because this is the sword that just comes out of nowhere at times. And we've joked about that.
Yeah.
But I got to ask you, now that you have more sword experience under your belt, when I see that sword, it's like a one-handed sword. Is that sword really strong enough to cut through a person's head? cut their head off?
That one probably could.
Yeah.
With the right application and the right cutting edge and the right angle. Mm-hmm. Things like a rapier, they're a little bit thinner. They don't have enough mass. They can't generate.
So that's what I was wondering. Does it have enough mass? Do you know what type of sword that is?
It looked like basically a one-handed sword, and I think it does have enough mass. Rapiers are really thin and long, and they're usually one-handed swords. Anything that you can like give like a good two-handed grip on, and she can.
Right.
I would probably designate her sword closer to like a hand and a half sword. What would they call it? Bastard sword.
What did you think of that scene when Nick presented her sword? Did you get any meaning behind that?
Oh well, I think it's like Nick wanted to have. Well, first of all, this was in a time where this was pre 9/11, you know. So the idea of being able to go through customs with a sword and most of his arsenal was kind of a non-starter, you know. It was just, oh sure, he could get through customs. All he has to do is kind of like flash his badge and like get all this gear, you know, through customs. It's a completely different world nowadays. But I think it's because I think in some way he wanted to use that against Korda. Like let the sword be the last aspect of revenge when he kills Korda with Amanda's sword.
Yeah,
I think that's kind of where he was going with that, but obviously, things changed in the episode. And it was also, it was like that nice moment. It's like, oh, you brought my sword back. You know, it's like you were thinking of me, right? You can't let me go or you would have left it behind.
This isn't in the notes. I wanted to bring this up. I went to Paris. I've been to Paris a couple times. One time I spent 2 weeks there. But the one thing I regret not doing is going to the catacombs. Mm. And there's a scene in there. It looks like part of it is filmed in part of the catacombs. Maybe it was a set. I don't know. But I thought that was a really interesting thing that they did when they were trying to find out how Corder was escaping and to find out where they could get him. And also, I did like the fight scene between the end fight scene between Corda and Amanda. It was on that kind of like train track thing, and she got to pop out the fan that she had took from him. Because remember, he had asked about it in the I think it was the previous episode, maybe. What did you think about the Paris scenes regarding that little shootout in the I'm going to call it the caverns there, and then also the end fight scene where she gets Corda's head and gets a quickening.
Well, I think that the catacomb scene, it adds a lot of that ancient quality that we like about going over to Paris, because, you know, we saw that in The Beast Below all the way back to Highlander the Series Season 1. We saw that in other episodes as well. So when you visit the catacombs, it's kind of like, oh, yeah, you know, this is... We're dealing, obviously, especially in the context of this episode, with something that Amanda was familiar with because she was talking about the resistance. She was talking about, I guess, World War II resistance and how a lot of those passages should have been blocked off. So it gives history and weight, you know, to the setting. And I really like that. The only thing I probably was a little iffy on was they had, you know, the torches or flashlights. And it was supposed to be super dark, but it was really super well lit.
Right, yeah. Right?
So that was kind of a little weird. But also, I do like that whole fight on the train tracks because, one, it was really, like, just, I like that scene. It was well lit. It was nice and dark. It allowed them a really nice space to fight. And it allowed the pyrotechnicians to set up a really great quickening, probably one of the better quickenings that I've seen in a long time.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah.
One of the other things, too, is the subplot in this second episode is that you get to see a little bit more about Corda's criminal empire, where he kidnaps this guy to help him make counterfeit Euro notes, basically, counterfeit money scheme. And I kind of like that little scene there, especially when Bert gets captured. And right before he's rescued by Nick, he asks that guy to get his lighter so he can have a cigarette, but the lighter, like, you know, blowtorched him, comes out. I like that you got to see how Corda's influence reaches his criminal empire over in Paris, and of course his club that he has there. What was your take on that?
I really liked it because I do like James Bond type villains, and I think that Valentine Pelka would have been a great James Bond villain.
That is an excellent point.
So you're feeling that he's an immortal, but he's doing what, say, Grayson would have done. You know, he has this criminal empire that's very far-reaching. He wants to use whatever counterfeit money that he's making, maybe to destabilize economies, because this was supposed to have been the very first incarnation of, like, the pound note when the European Union was just newly formed. So that was really interesting to see. Of course, it's kind of cool always when you get, like, the engraver, right? Yeah. And all the printing presses and all that kind of stuff. But it also... kind of the whole story, like, formulated around this great kind of caper episode where Nick's like, you know, don't look at what you think is right. Look at the other things. Look at the chaos. You know, look at all the non kind of like connected crimes that are happening. You know, the butterfly effect. And I thought, okay, Nick's pretty smart. You know, he's doing the whole detective thing. Yeah. You know, he's kind of like doing the whole Batman detective thing. Like, let's look for the subtleties.
But working with Bert, too, and Bert's one of those characters I gravitated towards. Mm-hmm. A lot has to do with the actor as well. I really like that character.
You know, there's a scene where Nick and Amanda were looking at the catacombs map, and they folded up and, you know, they said, hey, you know, we're just looking for souvenirs and you're going tourist trap hunting. But the jacket that Bert was wearing was literally like shades away from Indiana Jones's leather jacket.
Oh, totally, dude.
Right.
Yeah.
And I was like,
good observation.
I was like, look at that. I was like, Kevin would like that jacket. He just doesn't have kind of like the button pockets, you know, but he has like the D ring like the cinches on the side. And when he walks away, I'm like, well, that looks like Dr. Jones's jacket. So it's just one of those small details. I'm like, I think Kevin would like that.
You call him Dr. Jones, doll.
No, but Bert, I think given time, unfortunately, we didn't get a chance to see it with Lucy because I don't think Lucy Becker actually really worked out all that much. She was kind of like, kind of Maurice, kind of not. But I think that over time, Bert would have been a really good character that rounded out that cast.
Agreed. Yeah. The next two points are kind of related, so let's go ahead and dive into that. Reactions to this Raven two-part story and how it began to find itself in the Highlander mythology. And also, we're going to answer that question that we teased in the last episode, Norm. Matter of Time and the French Connection. We're going to answer this. Mm-hmm. Are these two episodes the quintessential and must-see episodes of Highlander the Raven? But first of all, touch on the first part about how this two-part story began to find itself in the Highlander mythology.
Well, I think that these two episodes, I think they're starting to really kind of like place really good roots for the Raven in the Highlander mythology. I think Amanda is finally coming into her own as the lead character as opposed to someone who has inherited this series from Duncan.
Right. That's a good point.
Right. So for the first half of the season, up until this point, I think some people were waiting for Adrian to make a guest appearance or from somebody like a major alumni from the series to make an appearance. And when Joe finally did, when Jim Burns did, I think he was the right choice for that appearance because he really is the character that should be bridging the two universes as a watcher. Yeah. Right, the Watchers organization is applied to all immortals, not just the immortals of Seacouver. So once that happened, I think that, okay, there is like a legitimate kind of tie-in to both series and allowed Amanda to shine. I think these two episodes really allowed her to shine. Also, it allowed the relationship between Nick and Amanda to really kind of blossom.
You know? Yeah, I couldn't have said it better. Agreed. I think this is where, too, the writers were probably starting to get a groove, mm-hmm. I think, and kind of returning to the Highlander roots, so to speak.
Well, the series roots for sure.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, the Raven's roots, yeah. And just finding some good characters, supporting characters to bounce off of as well. And, you know, I know we had a little slight disagreement on the casting of Korda, but I liked him. I liked his character in this. And, you know, I like seeing bad guys or bad, you know, bad women, depending on who the villain is. I love seeing a well-developed villain. And I like the fact that this character had his criminal roots for a while now and always sought after Amanda. But was still able to, you know, do what he needed to do to get things done. And I love the fact that he reaches across the globe in this way. And you got that feeling, you know.
I mean, so, even though Andre Korda was killed, I would have liked to have seen Krista Van Pelt survive and become kind of like the revenge, like immortal, you know, like.
Yeah,
you know, kind of like the way that remember the in an episode in the series Morgan Destang, you know, he was like a student of Xavier St. Cloud's,
right? Yeah,
and I would have liked to have seen like Krista be like this vengeful student of Andre Korda's, who even though
I liked Krista,
so did I
thought she was a great character, because she was just like she was like vengeful and mean, and you know
I would have liked to have seen her.
She totally had a hero worship, too, I think, towards Korda.
And then Korda gets taken out, and all of a sudden she just becomes this completely, like, revenge-bent immortal that has all of Korda's, I guess,
influence and power,
and assets
money,
and all that kind of stuff now behind her.
Yeah, yeah.
I would have liked to have seen her continue. I think that's a mistake in this episode that I would have liked to have seen rectified.
That would have been cool. Yeah. Okay, let's answer this then. Are these the two episodes, the two quintessential must-see episodes of Highlander the Raven? What I mean by that is, first, maybe you're recommending the Raven to someone. Mm-hmm. First, and if they're familiar with Highlander, the first episode's not going to put wind in their sails on this, to be honest with you. I don't think it will. Do you have them watch these two first?
Wow, that's a good question. You know, I don't know the Raven series as well as I should to answer this question. I'm not trying to deflect it. I don't know enough to say like, no, you know, like see it or skip it. Like, no, of course not. You should see this episode because there's a lot going on with the final episode, the finale of this series, not the finale of the season, finale of the series, Dead on Arrival, because there's a lot of very important things that happen in that episode.
Right.
But if you want to give somebody kind of like a nice theatrical presentation of a nice 2-hour story, absolutely yes. However, it only really works, in my opinion, if you are a fan of Highlander the series.
Yes. Yeah.
I think that's fair to say.
I think there's a lot of fans that are familiar with the TV series that haven't jumped into The Raven, to be honest with you.
Now, if
or maybe saw it in its original run and forgotten about it.
But so I agree with you. And you saying that, I think that if you're a fan of Highlander the series, I would absolutely recommend these two to start with.
Yeah.
But if you don't know anything about this series, I can't even recommend the very first episode of you'd have to go all the way back to The Gathering because there's no real canonical establishment in the very first episode of The Raven.
I know we've touched on if you were to tell a new person that wanted to jump into the original Highlander TV series, you would say you got to check out this episode, and this episode, but definitely go back and watch all the other ones. So we've established that we would probably recommend these two. Do you think these are the two quintessential must-see episodes then?
I think that's the difficulty of this season or the series is that I don't know. I really don't. I don't know the series well enough to say yes or no. For me, as a fan of Highlander, the series, I would say yes because of seeing Jim Burns, because of seeing Valentine Pelka. But does the narrative hold up past the nostalgia and love I have for the characters that I'm seeing? That's I think, is where I can't make that distinction. I love these two episodes because of what I'm seeing as a fan of the series, not for, wow, this is a great narrative that I'm watching. Now, I'm not saying that it's not, but seeing Jim Burns, seeing Valentine Pelka in the context that they're in makes it special for me.
Agreed.
So
yeah.
I'm going to have to abstain from that answer, to be honest with you.
That's all right. Yeah. I think they are the two quintessential episodes. I think for those that have and are familiar with The Raven might agree with that. There's a couple of other great standalone episodes that come after this as well. And I do feel that when the production does move to Paris, I think we get a little bit better storytelling, in my opinion. I've been rewatching some of the other ones into the Paris ones as well. And I'm going to continue through the end of it and stuff. But I think that, just like most television series, you have, the show starts to get a little bit better as it goes on, And that's how I feel about the second half of the season so far of Raven. But for those of you that are listening, if you've recently done a Raven rewatch, I'd love to get your opinion on this. I know, Mike, I know you're listening. You've recently done it. Kat, if you're listening, same. Let us know how you feel about it compared from the first half of the production was in Toronto compared to where the stories take us when they move to Paris. So, yeah.
But now I have to say, though, that I think that so many elements are going in the right direction from these two episodes, right? There's the relationship that Nick and Amanda have and the development of characters like Bert and like Father Liam. You're starting to kind of like round out the team, you know, the way that's in Band of Brothers in season one, you know, you had Duncan and you had Richie and you had Tessa and you had Darius, you know, you finally established Darius.
Yeah.
So, and then that's like the team that you now start building on. Until that point in the original series, you didn't really have that team established. But now at that point, like now in these two episodes, in Matter of Time and French Connection, you're really building kind of like the core structure of where the series could have gone.
Yeah.
Yeah. So from that aspect, I can definitely recommend these two as like, okay, you're seeing characters that are probably going to survive the test of time throughout the course of what could have been several series or seasons later.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. Good stuff, Norm. Well, before we go into the final thoughts, I want to do a quick little Immortal Buzz segment here that I didn't put in the notes because I had to bring this up. There was a gentleman by the name of Gus Weber, and he says, in the spirit of Highlander, and this is what he posted in Blood of Kings, mm-hmm. I got a new graph. I got me met autograph from Christopher Lambert, mm-hmm. and he posted the picture. And I know Christopher recently has done an appearance in, a convention or two in England, and it seems like he's making more appearances, apparently. Peter Leonidas says he is doing quite a few conventions this year, planning on attending another sword, planning on getting another sword signed by him, and the two ladies, Edney on the McLeod sword and Hart on the katana.
BDED Norm, and Roxanne Hart.
Yes, exactly. Right. They've been doing the convention segment too. I would have loved to have gotten my chance to meet Christopher Lambert. I know he did make one state appearance once. I know he went to Australia. Mm-hmm. If you had the chance to meet Christopher Lambert, what items would you get signed?
Wow, I would have to bring my... I can get it through customs and all that kind of stuff. I would have to bring my Ramirez katana. If I couldn't bring it through customs, I'd at least bring the scabbard.
Okay.
Have that signed.
All right.
I also have a picture, a black and white picture that I want to have framed of Duncan MacLeod just standing there in that battle in Glencoe, just saying, like, why will no one fight me? I've had that forever. I just haven't put it up on my wall yet.
Yeah. Good choices.
You know what? If I still had it, and I know you have it, I would probably have had him sign my 10th anniversary Laserdisc.
Ooh, yes. That's a good one. Yeah. Ooh, I like that one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How about you?
Okay, I would add the Laserdisc. That's good, too. I would have to definitely pick one or two of the Highlander CCG persona cards.
Which one, though? Especially, would it be Russell Nash from The Gathering in the series, or would it be his classic Highlander battle dress?
Classic Highlander battle dress. If I could get both done, I would. Yeah. But there's a part of me, though, that would really love to get the Highlander Endgame poster.
Oh.
Because I love that image of both MacLeods, mm-hmm. you know, shoulder to shoulder. Maybe have him sign that as well. Or find like an original Highlander poster too.
Yeah.
That would be really cool.
Yeah.
But one of these days, I hope that we'll get a chance to see him and get a chance to meet him, maybe a picture or something like that. Because hopefully he does more. Because I can only assume that, you know, he would be a popular person to go to. Because a lot of people have a love for the original Highlander if they're not even fans of the TV series. And I think that he should make more appearances. I would love to see that.
I mean, a lot of people still loved him as Raiden from Mortal Kombat 1.
Yeah.
Greystoke. Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know, I mean, he has a lot of... He's done a lot of, I guess, kind of like B-level fandom movies.
Yeah. Or Gunman with Mario Van Peebles.
Right? Where he and Kane were on the same side.
Yeah. Well, I just wanted to get your take on that because that's another bucket list item is to meet the Highlander himself.
I would love to meet. Yeah, that's kind of like we've met Adrian and, you know, we've established a really good, you know, professional, friendly relationship with him in the Sword Experience, you know, up to the point where, you know, we're, you know, we're, I guess, conversationally friendly with him, which is nice. But being able to do that with Connor, you know, Christopher Lambert, that's a completely different thing, right?
Agree.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, let's give our final thoughts here on part two of Highlander the Raven, The French Connection. I really love these episodes. When I was doing my research on this, I knew that we were going to be returning to the Raven. These had to be covered. Mm-hmm. And also, too, I'm sure there's a lot of listeners that maybe don't know about these, you know, that more, like I said earlier, that just have watched the original TV series and maybe haven't watched the TV series at all. That, you know, and there's been some, you know, some people have said, why are we calling it Highlander? You know, there is no Highlander in it, you know. But I think the name Highlander has become synonymous with the world of the immortals. And I think it's important because, you know, the character of Amanda has a a close personal relationship with a Highlander, and that's Duncan MacLeod.
I think that's a fair point to say, and I actually want to spend a little bit of time on that because I've been in that debate for a long time, you know, as a series fan from, you know, all the way back when. It's the same thing when they said Star Trek The Next Generation, Star Trek Deep Space Nine, Star Trek Voyager, and then when they dropped the Star Trek for Enterprise and then added it back in. Highlander is the brand, okay? You have to use the brand equity of that brand in order for you to establish the relationship between fans from the previous series to support this new series. So, yes, she has nothing to do with being an actual Highlander, but to take a little bit of that out of the equation, Highlander is the brand, right? So you have to use it in order to sell what you are putting on TV.
Yes.
Right? Because if you just throw Amanda the Raven out there, there is no marketing traction from that brand. Right?
Good point. Yeah.
So you got to, even we're dealing with fandom here, you still have to put your real world hat on when you see something like this. Mm-hmm. And the reason why they call it this is because of the, at this time, 5 movies and 6 seasons of TV plus peripheral, you know, pieces of work like books and stuff like that, all supporting the brand.
Yeah. Right?
So
yeah,
that's why.
Agreed. It's branding.
It's branding.
Plain and simple. Yep. Absolutely right. Yeah. I mean, and that gives you the flexibility to tell another story about immortals that aren't from the Scottish Highlands.
But yeah, also, when you say something is Highlander, it automatically clicks you into this universe of immortals and sword fighting.
Right? Exactly.
It's like in Star Wars. Exactly. As soon as you hear the opening blare of Star Wars, you don't even have to look at the logo. You know you are in the Star Wars universe, period.
Agreed. Yeah. Agreed. Yep. Yeah. Well, Norman, we get to Kevin's immortal quickening scale here. Where do you give this second part? Okay, here's what I want to ask you. What do you give this second part, The French Connection? What do you give it on the quickening scale?
See, for me,
then what would you give both of these if you were to clump them together as one story?
I think because I'm not basing my opinion on my love for previous characters like Joe in the first one, I'm actually giving it a little bit higher up, a higher grade up. I'm going to give it a Duncan Caredwin, because I'm actually investing myself in characters that I haven't seen before, like Father Liam, right? Mm-hmm. And Myers, right? So yep. Those characters, they mean more to me and invested me more in the story because they were new and they were well-written and they were engaging and they have nothing to do with me and my love for, say, watching Jim Burns, because I know that seeing Jim Burns in a matter of time completely takes me away from being objective about that episode.
Good point.
Right? Yeah. So being more objective of this episode, I'm actually looking at it for character development and plot development and story. And I liked the way that this flowed. I liked being able to be in Paris again. I liked seeing kind of like the machinations of Corda's universe. And I like being able to invest myself in new characters. So I'm giving that a Duncan Caredwin. And I think that overall, I'm going to give the entire two-parter a Duncan Caredwin.
I'm with you. We're on the same plane here. That's number 8. I will also give this episode and both of these together a Duncan Caredwin. A good solid number 8. 1 out of 10 is, I think, is more than fair. It's a fun two-parter. It's adventurous. It's got some great characters. Good villain, of course. And you get to see the jump from one continent to another, and you get to see how it kind of changes the face of it a little bit, and I love that.
I think that I probably would have scored this Darius if Krista Van Pelt made the jump also with Corda and replaced that other throwaway female character that was in this episode.
Agreed. And also, I would have done the same thing if Joe would have gone over to Paris, too.
If he went over to Paris, this thing would be hitting Mythos for me.
Yes.
Because Joe back in Paris? Oh, my God. Right?
Yes, I know. Yeah.
Especially kind of like walking that area by the barge and him saying, like, it's been a while. You know, just like that moment, I'd be like, oh, my God.
Ah, good point. Well, it's been a lot of fun discussing Blood of Kings 71 here. Highlander the Raven, episode part 2, The French Connection. Of course, recently on Blood of Kings, we did part 1 of this, A Matter of Time. And this has been really fun looking back on the Raven. It's that's what I love about our format, Norm, that we can go back and just touch on any Highlander media, television show, movie, anime, book, audiobook. It's really, it gives us the free form to just discover all facets of a Highland, of our Highlander fandom.
I'm so glad you said anime, because there's stuff about that that I want to pursue.
Yes, we will. But also, we have some other great programming here on the Fandom Podcast Network. Of course, we have our weekly fandom show, Fandom News Show, Culture Clash, where we cover all of our nerdy and geeky news. Hosted by myself and our co-founder, Kyle Wagner. And we're having a lot of fun with our segments. Of course, I have my weekly physical media movie pick as well. Kyle, I think, will soon be doing his Kyle's Cloud while I'm away. Mm-hmm. But we've been doing Countdown to Ready Player One, which is the movie version is coming out at the end of March, directed by Steven Spielberg, based on Ernest Cline's great novel with the same name.
What did you think of the new preview that just got released with him actually talking about the Halliday's Challenge?
I really got excited.
Yeah.
We know there's going to be some changes done, some liberties changed to make this into the movie. Mm-hmm. And they're not going to cover all the cool stuff that we wanted from the book, but that's what we're doing with this segment, is we're covering all the great 80s references that the Gunters, the Egg Hunters, are having to learn to try and win Halliday's Easter Egg contest, which will give them control of the Oasis and millions and millions and millions of dollars.
Just hearing the poem, you know, it's like, you know, and whoever is worthy to, you know, whatever these straits will enter the gates with a prize awaits. I'm just like, oh, it's actually being said, like, out loud.
Yes. Yeah.
And it's not Will Wheaton. We're also, sorry, Will Wheaton, but it's not Will Wheaton.
Yes. Now, Will Wheaton does a great job reading the audiobook. I know, because I've listened to it a few times. We're also doing our countdown to Avengers Infinity War by reviewing each film of the Marvel Cinematic Universe in cinematic release order. That's been a lot of fun.
Wakanda Forever.
Yes, Wakanda Forever. Just saw Black Panther and we loved it. Norm, why don't you tell us what else is going on in the Fandom Podcast Network?
Well, we always talk about couch potato theater, the kind of movies that you will watch on the couch because you're just sitting there and you don't want to get up and get your DVD or your Blu-ray off of your shelf. And hey, why would you want to dust, like, you know, just pounds of potato chip crumbs off of your chest when you do it? So on couch potato theater, we have recently finished up Harley Davidson and the Marlboro Man. It's a very beloved classic, especially, I know. Yes. Kevin loves that because he did the coverage on that. And then recently you have recorded Tango and Cash, or Cash and Tango, whoever holds the pink slip from Satan.
And this is one of those great shows that we have that if you're a fan of a certain movie, feel free to contact us. And we'll get you on to do another one. We've had a few of our Australian friends say, we want on that. So we're going to be covering some more Couch Potato Theater.
Bring them on. Absolutely. And then we have something that's very, like, near and dear to Kevin. We have the Time Warp. So he is covering the four, I guess maybe four segments of 1985. You know, you have four segments because you have four quarters of 1985, the 80th of all of the years of the 1980s. And he has just recorded part one. I know that you have some special honorable mentions of part one for the movies that you covered.
Yes, we covered Tough Turf. Great James Spader film.
Biggest crush on Kim Richards. Oh, my God.
She had that beautiful hair, too. Yeah. Remember that? We also, Breakfast Club, one of the iconic ones as
Many
well.
Many crushes in there, too, including Judd Nelson.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. We covered some great films, and we're looking forward to the next three parts. And we also are looking back on all of the pop culture of 85 as well, and music and television and other entertainment as well. So yes,
I want to know if anyone out there actually did what Ally Sheedy did and kind of like take her sandwich and like throw Captain Crunch and Pixie Sticks like all over it and eat it. I wonder if anyone actually did that. You know? Not to say that it's great. I'm just like, just for fun. You know, some people like make weird sandwiches just to try them. I'm not exactly sure if that would work out. So So we have that coming out on Time Warp. A lot of really great stuff coming out because 1985 is the year that gave us Back to the Future. If you haven't seen it.
That's right. That was the big movie of the year.
If you haven't seen that, that's unforgivable. Sorry. So make sure that you follow Time Warp because Kevin has worked very hard and has done a great job in researching this because there's so many great movies coming out from that year of the 1980s. We also have Discoville, which is our Star Trek Discovery and the Orville podcast, and we will be going into a little bit more in depth of the seasons now since both Star Trek Discovery and the Orville have been on hiatus, and I do believe that the Orville has started and ramped up production, and we're very excited to have it back on in the fall because we are in an Orville drought. And that's not a good thing. We want more Orville on the screen. And I think that Star Trek Discovery is going to be coming out in 2019, maybe 2020.
But we don't know that for sure yet.
Not a lot of concrete information has come out for that. So we will give you that information as soon as we get it on Discoville. And we also have Good Evening. Good Evening. An Alfred Hitchcock podcast with our hosts, Tom Caldwell, Brandon Shea, Matala, and Chris Haig. They give us a collegiate level film studies level course in the form of a podcast. If you're a fan of Alfred Hitchcock, you definitely want to listen to what these guys have to say. And now we are entering almost, what would you say? Not draft season, but kind of speculation
the
season.
Next big thing for NFL right now, I know there's free agency coming up, so which is might be happening around the time this episode comes out. We're going to be covering that because that's when a lot of movers and shakers and a lot of people start getting paid.
Right. Contracts are going to be shuffled around, signed, and a lot of money's going to get freed up and stuff like that. So that's going to be happening on the End Zone. Just because the NFL season is off, we're in the off season, doesn't necessarily mean the NFL itself is taking a break, because it never does, because the NFL is a money-making Goliath. Keep going on. So that's what's happening on the Fandom Podcast Network.
Thank you so much, Norm. And again, it was awesome talking about The Raven. We appreciate it. And we hope that our listeners have enjoyed it as well. And when these episodes hit the airwaves, let us know on the Blood of Kings Facebook fandom group what you thought. And share your own experiences, maybe when you were watching Raven for the first time, even if it was just recently. And if you haven't listened to it or watched it yet, please watch it. You will enjoy it. So I'm Kevin. On behalf of my co-host, Norman, thanks everyone for listening. And join us again next time here on the Fandom Podcast Network for another episode of Blood of Kings, a Highlander podcast. Norm, that sensation you are feeling is the quickening. We are one. We are brothers. Goodbye, everyone.